RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
All right, it's Tuesday morning. Let's go right across the planet to the UK to Tony Gosling, former BBC reporter, now investigative journalist. He joined us a few months ago, and he's back with us. And you can listen to him if you want to on BCFM Politics Show, Apple Podcasts, and that broadcast from Bristol in the UK. Tony also has a connection to New Zealand. His parents live here. Tony, it's good to have you back. How are you doing?
Well, they lived there. They sold the place now. They were in the Coromandel area.
Oh, that's
anyone,
right.
A lot of people in Tairua knew them very well, actually. And it was quite amazing when they came back. The ambulance people were on the radio letting everyone know, the Goslings are back. So it's a bit like that over there.
So in Coromandel, if you're in Coromandel, they're probably thinking, Tony, oh, the Goslings. I remember them.
Yeah, they sold up, I think, last year sometime. It was just getting too, and they're in their 80s, tiring going backwards and forwards. And so they've decided, let's just stay in the UK. But yeah, the connection with New Zealand, I also love the place. You know, I think for a lot of people visiting other countries, they want a lot to do. I was really impressed, actually, with just your kind of normal rural and urban population there. People just seem much more switched on than in many other parts of the world. Should we say a bit cynical about their government? In fact, one of the chaps, Brian in Tairua, I hope you won't mind
Brian
me saying.
Brian in Tairua.
He said, he's an old ex Royal New Zealand Air Force chap, retired.
Right. Yep.
And he was saying, well, next year there's going to be a civil war here, you know.
Oh.
Towards the end of COVID, and there's just I think a much more understanding that what we're getting fed is nonsense, and I really love some of these out of the way backwater places that we just don't get anything like that, really. Maybe in Mid Wales you might get it here.
Mid Wales,
but very little. Yeah,
that's the Northern Hemisphere equivalent of New Zealand. Good to know. Okay, Tony, let's get into the list here. Southport stabbing perpetrator. What do we know now that we didn't know when this awful, horrible thing happened?
Well, last week the police admitted, although people are still sceptical about whether this is true or not, that apparently they found an Al-Qaeda training manual on his computer, as well as he'd actually successfully made some rice in poison. Now, I mean, the first attitude to when the police announce things like this is, oh, yeah, really? But what it does is it steps it up to being most definitely a terrorism case. That means to say Matt Dukes in London, the guy who's been arresting all the journalists over here, the anti-terror branch, he will be now taken over that case. Anything to do with terrorism gets the Met come in from London and just all the local lads, all the local cops are pushed out of the way. And so that's what will have happened there. But the key thing is here is likely he was groomed. If this is true, he's got this stuff. And he was doing this stuff. This young kid who was 17, now 18, he's probably been groomed online to do it. So a lot of this sort of thing goes on Facebook. And then, of course, when something happens, like the stabbing, all that stuff is just deleted off the social media. There's no trace of it. But we went into in depth the case of Shamima Begum, who went over to ISIS to be an ISIS bride from Bethnal Green in East London. And her three friends were all groomed on Facebook by Canadian intelligence.
Wow, really?
And so look, you can look this up because this is the reason why they don't want Shamima Begum to come back to Britain. They took away her passport because she'd be running around all the press here saying, we were groomed online, blah, blah, to go to see ISIS. And then people might realise, gosh, the Canadian intelligence. And what they were doing was recruiting intelligence agents to do this grooming. And then when they were successful in grooming girls, or I suppose guys as well, to go over to via Turkey to join ISIS, they would be giving them Canadian citizenship. So it was a sort of bribe, basically. So if you want to become a Canadian citizen, do a few little jobs like this for us. And so that's, I think, is very widespread. And it's very simple with collusion of big companies like Meta. They'll just delete everything, and there's no trace of a potential fact. That's what I'm suggesting here, that this kiddie was groomed to, you know, do the stabbings, you know, the murders, etc. Maybe they prey on some young lad who's a bit mentally unstable. They might be he was definitely on the autistic spectrum. He may have been fed antidepressant drugs, which would make you much more aggressive. You know, contrary to what a lot of people think, these drugs are very dangerous. And anyway, so that's the interesting take home from this stabbing, I think, is that what was going on online to get him to be the kind of crazy nut he was?
Yeah, and who was doing the online persuasion?
Well, the whole thing was bizarre because we now know Tommy Robinson and the far right here were absolutely raring to go. As soon as this stabbing happened, they spread loads of disinformation about this guy being a Muslim all over the internet. And then there were big riots saying, oh, it's the Muslims are killing our kids. You know, of course he wasn't. But it could be the same faction, that is to say the Israelis and the Mossad, that have been feeding Tommy Robinson, that were also grooming this kid. I mean, the intelligence services get up to all sorts of dodgy stuff on the internet, none of which is accountable. They say it's all military sensitive. No one can do freedom of information requests or anything about it. And that's how they get away with it, I think. So, I mean, that's to me the sort of summer riots in Britain. Definitely Robinson and his mates. They put out these lies deliberately in order to get people out in the streets. And it's largely, I think, because there's been such a strong pro-Gaza, pro-Palestine movement in Britain. And we've had hundreds of thousands of people, half a million people sometimes, out on the streets of London supporting the Gazans, and very, very few, if any, supporting Israel.
So that's to counter that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see Zionist flag being waved. He was doing the same this last weekend. He stood there with a Zionist flag, the Israeli flag, Tommy Robinson. And this is what they're painting as the far right. So the Israelis are the opposition to the Muslims. This is the sort of thing they're trying to portray. And the Muslims are the enemy, even though the Israelis are killing Christians and anybody in Gaza. They don't care if you're a Muslim or not. They'll still drop a bomb on your head. So they're trying to create this sort of tension between Zionism and Islam to mirror what's going on in the Middle East over here. I think that's what's going on.
We'll get to a bit of Gaza before we're done. Starmer's new team to tackle people smugglers' security threat. What's their plan?
Well, this is hilarious. I was listening to this press conference this morning. Actually, it was an Interpol conference in Glasgow. And Starmer is announcing all these wonderful new tech devices he's going to use to help fight the people smugglers and stop the boats. And, of course, it's not people who have got the power to do it. It's technology. So he's spending loads of money on technology to do it, like drones.
You bring a bit of tech in. Borrow some from the Ukrainian theatre, maybe.
Look, they could stop this like that if they wanted to. Of course they could. The Royal Navy could, the Coast Guards could. But the thing is, there's no will to do it because there hasn't been all the way through the last decade or so that this has been going on, any real will to stop these. This is organised crime. It's the European Union organised crime. In fact, last week, I don't know if you followed this, but they found a massive warehouse in Dresden where they were keeping all the inflatable boats that they were then using to in Germany, you know, to bring these people over. And they've just signed a defense agreement with the Germans, so the Germans are going to have German Air Force Luftwaffe aircraft based here in Britain, as well as a German gun factory now is going to be built here in Britain. And so, you know, what's going on here really is the Brexit thing is just a joke. No one's taking it really seriously. No, it's not happened. And the big German companies that have been kept out for decades since World War II are now just coming in and setting up in Britain as if it's part of their territory. And that's what the government is going along with. And that's why I think there's no real effort to stop the real agenda with the people on the boats is just to undermine wages here. And it's doing very, very successful at doing that. That's what organized crime are up to. And, of course, they're also undermining the trade unions who fought for pay and conditions for years. And now, you know, these big corporations that seem to run everything nowadays, they can just fire the people who are in a union and hire some bit of migrant labour. That's what they're doing all over the country.
Crikey. Class war, in other words, class warfare.
It is, yeah. It's a way of undermining. I mean, you know, it started really with the miners' strike. It wasn't anything to do with energy back in the 1970s and mainly in the 1980s here, is it was really just an attack on the trade union movement and the ability of people to organise against unscrupulous employers. In fact, if you talk to miners nowadays, retired elderly miners, they'll say, well, actually, well, you know, our generations of our grandparents fought for decades to get good conditions, which had pretty much arrived by the 1960s and 70s. The unions had got very good conditions in the British coal mines and other mines, you know, tin mines and things like that. Excellent conditions, good pay as well. And then what happened is the Americans flooded the market with tin, destroyed that tin, the tin mines that way. And with the coal mines, well, I mean, they had a massive battle between Margaret Thatcher and the coal miners here, and destroyed the coal mines like that. So it was just a way of destroying organized labor, really.
Never forget that name, Arthur Scargill. He was the mining guy.
Well, he's still alive. He's still doing talks. He still he still turns up at the rallies up in Durham. A bit doddery. And he doesn't believe in all this climate stuff either. I can tell you that. I spoke to him on the phone last year. And so he's what he's saying is, yes, we can reduce the carbon in in coal-fired power stations. In fact, they developed all the technology to do it. And then the government just put all this money into developing carbon capture and then just said, well, we're going to close these coal-fired power stations anyway.
All right, moving on, and the introduction of the Office for Digital Identities and Attributions. What? What's that about?
Well, okay, it's your digital ID. It's your microchip, you know, that you need to do everything, like the mark of the beast. This is what they're moving. They've been moving towards this, I think, for a long time. The idea of, your password's been hacked again. Oh, dear, we're sorry, a data breach. So why don't you just have a little special digital ID, and you can put that on a little device you plug into your computer, and then we really know it's you. Actually, it's part of this zero trust agenda, so nobody's really trusted anymore. You know, it's like guilty until proven innocent in the modern world. And, yes, it is. It's the idea is really to track and trace you everywhere, so we know where you are, we know what you're buying, and this is really the kind of gateway drug to the programmable money, which they're planning to introduce. Now, as you probably know, programmable money is not just money. You can only spend it on certain things. It's totally like the Chinese social credit system. So, for example, if you want to go on a train, you've got to behave yourself for the last year. And if you have behaved yourself, you can pay for your train ticket. If you haven't, you can't. So it's telling you what you're allowed to spend and what you're not allowed to spend your money on. And that's where we're moving towards with this. It's a system of, I mean, you know, the, in fact, I publish a book. I probably shouldn't just plug it, but it's called The Siege of Heaven Reader, which is an anthology of secret government ever since the English Civil War. Loads and loads of stuff from over the last few centuries about hidden government, secret government, up to the Princess Diana assassination. And on the front of it, it's got a little baby with a cow tag in its ear. Yeah. So that's what the digital ID is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you are not a person. You are a number. Yeah. And don't you forget it.
All right. So it's happening. So it's got to be in the forehead or the right hand to really be that mark, apparently.
But well, your forehead, yeah. The really important people get it in the forehead. And the rest of us, you know, that's the idea is if you're just some sort of numpty that has to do what you're told, it's in your hand because your hand and your labor.
Oh, actually. That's a really interesting point if you're into that prophecy, because holding a device in your hand could actually qualify as that meaning.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Oh, anyway. Okay, moving on. Inheritance tax change will cripple family farms. Is this a war on rural people, Tony?
It's it's a war on the family, really. Okay, so there's been various figures thrown around about how many farmers in Britain are going to be affected by this. It's anything over £1 million, which is most farms, you're going to have to pay your inheritance tax. Now, people might think that's not too bad, but the thing is, if your kids don't have a big lump sum sitting and waiting to pay that tax, they have to sell the farm or sell large chunks of it.
Right.
And that is likely to make it unviable. Now, if, say, for example, you're Bill Gates and you own that farm through one of your businesses or trusts, you don't pay anything, do you? Because it's not going to die. This is a corporate company that doesn't die. And so, therefore, there's no tax on these big corporations owning land or trusts owning land, or what they call, you know, foundations in the States. We have trusts here. So this is a way of just taxing anything that dies. That is to say, us. And if it doesn't die like a corporation, it doesn't pay it. There's about 700,000 farmers in this country going to be. They've already announced, the National Farmers Union, there's going to be a mass demo in the next month or so in central London about it. But this was, I mean, it's a very, very cynical move to try and take land off families, to free land up for people like BlackRock and Bill Gates to buy, so that they can either cover it with solar panels or else they can put robot tractors on to go backwards and forwards. It's very sinister. It's the sort of thing that we were worried that might happen, but thankfully the Tories didn't do. Almost as soon as they're around now, the Labour Party have decided they... I mean, there's already the Daily Mail on Saturday or Sunday reported one farmer committed suicide. Because, he's worked all his life. He wants to be able to hand his farm on to his kids. They're only making a little bit of money as farmers nowadays. It's not anywhere near as lucrative. They've had... Think about it. They've been told by the government they've got to set aside 10% of their land for foxes and whatever, badgers or something. And so that's a whole load of land they're not allowed to grow food on. Great. And then what's happened is we have a massive, massive energy price hike as well, 50% increase or so in energy prices. And that's the electricity, the gas, etc., that the farmers are using has all gone up. And so they're trying to drive farmers into the ground. Now, look, if you think about it, farming about 3,000 years ago started to produce a food surplus, at least in this part of the world. I'm not quite sure what's going on over there. But once you've got a food surplus, you can start to have a civilization, a society where people are doing other things, like maybe teaching others, maybe writing books, maybe medical care of others. You know, the old infirmaries we used to have in the monasteries. And so it allows, it's absolutely, what they're trying to do is basically barbaric. It's trying to drive people, end the independence in food production. So the big corporations will just control the prices of food and the supply of it. And the only people at the moment who are able to supply food that aren't corporates are the farmers. And they're trying, they're driving them into the ground. And they're making it clear, we don't want you, we don't like you, get out of farming, do something else. And it's 700,000 farmers in Britain are going to be affected by this inheritance tax, which they're going to have to really struggle to pay. So it's really, I mean, it's totally antisocial. It's World Economic Forum stuff. It's Bill Gates doing his lobbying successfully, BlackRock now running the show. It's effectively, it's fascist. Fascism in corporatism. So the idea that it's, the country is run for the big corporations, not for families, not for people.
All right, just a few minutes left, so let's spool through these quite quickly. Starmer's new bank spying powers, what are they?
Oh, the idea is that they can just go through people's bank accounts and have a look at everything. I mean, this is a good reason to close your bank account, I'd say, and actually just start doing cash. But what it's doing is it's getting rid of all forms of privacy. I mean, we had the digital ID earlier on. The idea that you have got any right to privacy is totally out the window. I mean, just think about how things have changed over the last decade or so. When I started as a journalist, nobody could put a journalist under surveillance without going in front of the police or the security services, without going in front of a judge and getting a warrant. Right. So you had to say, like, this guy is, and the judge would look at it and said, OK, yes. Now it's what they call mass surveillance. Everyone is under surveillance. Not only journalists. This is by the National Security Agency, which is information which is shared with the Israelis and all the Five Eyes countries. So, I mean, you know, you're I can't remember the guy's name. Is it you have a very good guy who did loads of reporting from New Zealand on the NSA back in the day. Anyway, he opened my eyes to this stuff. He did a really good article about Yakuza, which was the precursor to the Five Eyes, UK-USA agreement, and showed about keywords that were being used every time you're using the internet. What they're doing is that... So it's judges as well, can be, solicitors under surveillance, MPs under surveillance, and journalists all under surveillance. So there is total information awareness, and it's, this is the sort of thing that the Nazis were doing. So they, what they were doing was categorizing, we want all the Jews to be arrested in this town. Now they've got so much information on anyone, any kind of category of person, using Alex Karp and his Palantir software, they can just pull out, all right, let's get all the, let's say, Christians in Burnley, and let's arrest them all. Because there's a, and they've got a list of all of them there, and their addresses and everything. You know, so this is, this mass surveillance is criminal, and there are a few cases chugging along about that right now. So that's so that's that one for you.
Okay, and to finish up, I on the way in this morning, which is this evening your time as we're talking to you, I heard some news that Iran said that they were planning a big strike on Israel, but might hold back till after the election day or things becoming clear following the election day in the US tomorrow. So I heard that. And there's Gaza. I think we talked about that last time you were on. So,
well, look, hang on. With Iran, I think this is Israel saying this, you know, so we can't necessarily trust them. The Iranians realize that they're trying to start a war with them. I don't think they're, I think they're being very sensible and quite restrained, actually. Well, I'd like to see the Iranians do, and obviously they've got the force and power to do it. Just put a few crates of food and water into northern Gaza, fly them in, drop them from planes or something, and also to destroy that border fence so that people can actually get away if they want to. So that's the sort of thing I'd like to see, rather than trying to confront militarily, confront the Israelis, which would just do exactly what the Americans want. And by the way, American bombers today have arrived in the Middle East, I see, to defend the Israelis.
What sort of bombers are the B-2s, the stealthy ones, I suppose?
I'm not sure what they are. I can look it up if you want. It's just the headline on antiwar.com, which I think has done a pretty good job over the years in documenting all of this. The B-52s.
The old buff.
Old B-52s it is. But look, just on Gaza generally, what we're discussing, I was just at a lefty meeting here half an hour ago of the housing people here in Bristol. And we're all talking about the same thing. What is in it for us supporting Israel? What is in it for us? This is an absolutely appalling, disgusting genocide. These people are maniacs, Nazis, whatever you want to call them. But the fact of the matter is, the Lubavitcher rabbis over in Israel are a little bit like the mullahs at ISIS. You know, they're maniacs, basically. Even though they're trying to make out, oh, yeah, we're Judaic, we're, you know. They're not. What they're doing is they've convinced good old Netanyahu that he's on a mission to bring in the Jewish Messiah. So, you know, for 2,000 years, the Jews have been waiting for a Messiah. They didn't really agree with Jesus being the Messiah. So they're still waiting and waiting. So they're not going to wait any longer. They're going to make him arrive. And so that's the idea, I think, that's in Netanyahu's head, put there by these Lubavitcher rabbis, is he's got to create such chaos that then the Jewish Messiah can arrive on the scene and put it all right and be the great peacemaker, and he'll be their Messiah. So that is something I've only really tweaked to over the last couple of weeks, really. And then I had on my program, I had Tim Cohen on, who's a bit of a Christian Zionist himself, but he's written this book, The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea, and he suggests that either King Charles or Prince William is the Antichrist.
Yeah, I've seen him. I mean, I don't put that case forward. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I don't know. Look, listen, I'm not so stupid as to endorse that. But it is an interesting idea, because the British royal family seems to, I mean, one of the interesting things about Charles is he's put himself forward as from the line of David, that is to say, with his little prayer cap on, with the British rabbis, like the with Jeffrey Sachs and the top rabbis in London. And over in Israel, but he's also got this honorary degree in Islamic studies from Cairo University. So he's in with the Saudis and the Egyptians as well. So he's got, you know, links to both sides. And the more I see about this chaos that's being created, the more I think maybe that's the point of it, is to bring about some kind of someone can come in and sort it out and get all the credence for doing it, who will be seen as the great savior. You know, who knows? Like Hitler was in Germany in the 30s, by the way. People don't realize this. When Hitler came to power in 1933, he was welcomed by all sides because he was sorting out the absolute horrendous unemployment and starvation that was going on in Germany at the time. So, you know, maybe we're seeing a sort of remake of that movie.
Yeah, he would have to survive what would look like a fatal head injury if you go to 13:3 in Revelations. That's already happened to another guy just a few months ago. So
it's a good idea. What you're suggesting here, this thing of dusting off the Bible and having another look, because particularly things like the Mark of the Beast make it pretty clear. It seems to me this is happening in our time on the news. And it's important, I think, to put two and two together there, you know, not to think, oh, this silly old Bible's a stuffy old thing that isn't alive. No, it's not. It is. And possibly it was written for us to, as a sort of warning, you know, let's just be aware of what's going on behind the scenes, because it certainly isn't easy. When you ask this question, you know, what's in it for us? Why are they doing this? It's almost an impossible question to answer unless you really look into the background of it.
Tony Gosling, former BBC reporter, now at BCFM Politics. That's his show on Apple Podcasts, beaming in from Bristol, UK. Nice to have you back, Tony. Thank you. Say hi to your
parents.
Cheers,
Paul. Take care.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.